It is time for us to go live, go on the edge, Berkshire Edge live on air. Of course, BerkshireEdge.com, and they're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And every week we join them and we talk about their top stories. And I know we have Marcy. Is David there as well?
David is in the house.
Elvis is in the building.
In the house.
Right, good.
He just has to get to his computer. He just took his children to school.
And, now,
are you having any snow?
Oh, yeah, no, we have snow. We have, let's see. I don't know, about an inch and a half. It's still snowing.
But that's interesting because at my house in Salisbury, we had about 4 inches earlier this morning, and Sharon has about 2 or 3 inches, and Falls Village had about 4 or 5 inches. It really is dependent.
About 2 inches. I can't really tell. I'm looking for someplace where it's piled up.
Well, it's just...
It looks like about 2 or 3 inches.
All right. It's enough just to slow David down enough, we know.
Just enough.
To take you off.
He is now here going to his computer.
All right. Well, while he's going to his computer, we can go to the first story.
We can.
Which is, I think, local spirit shops are in a pickle. And angry about it. I like that lead in.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, you know, Great Barrington is anticipating the opening of about 5 pot shops, you know, right after the first of the year. And now we have another issue, which is about alcohol, about wine and spirits. Apparently, there is a limit to the number of licenses that can be given out, but somehow the town figured out a way to give the right to sell wine. This is not liquor licenses at restaurants. This is licenses to sell beer and wine. And they've given them to 2 new venues in Great Barrington, to the Berkshire Co-op and to Rubiner's Cheese Shop. And at the meeting of the Board of Selectmen, the already existing liquor stores, you know, were opposed to it. They had some interesting reasons. The owner of one store came in with a handful, I mean, not a handful, but a stack of fake IDs that he had taken from kids who were, you know, who were underage and who were trying to buy alcohol. And they said, you know, unless the store is equipped and able to identify these fake IDs, then they are likely to be selling alcohol to minors, and this is very dangerous. And they said, you know, we consider this stack of fake IDs sort of incidents of lives that we've saved, and they're concerned that these 2 new places are just not in a position they don't have the staff and they don't have the setup to be able to identify fake IDs. So, you know, at the one hand, of course, they are worried that they're going to lose their own business because the market will be diluted. Now we have 4 places where you can buy beer and wine instead of 2. But their other argument, and there was also somebody, a lobbyist from the wine and liquor, wine and beer sellers, or spirits, wine and beer sellers trade association, who came to support the existing shops. But in the end, 2 more shops were approved by the town, much to the chagrin of the pre-existing ones. And so now we have more places. So now, besides being able to buy pot in Great Barrington, there are also more places where you can buy alcohol. So we are really going to be a hot place to come to visit.
It's the Wild West, Massachusetts.
So now north of you, one of the pot shops has opened up already, right? North and east of you.
Yeah, that's right, in Northampton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the very first, and the governor was there for the opening, or the mayor? No, it was the mayor of Northampton came for the opening.
I wonder if he sampled the goods.
I was going to say.
No, he was going to preserve it for posterity, that it was going to go to eventually be donated to a museum as the first, to a historical society, as the first sampling of pot that was sold in Massachusetts. So, unless he got another little stash. Take home. That one is being saved.
Well, I have to tell you, what the state of Connecticut police issued issued a statement when it became legal, saying that if you go into Massachusetts and you come back with pot, there's a certain amount that you can have. It's up. I think it's under. It's like a half ounce or something, where you'll be charged with a misdemeanor. Anything more than that, in Connecticut. There's a certain amount where it's just going to be a misdemeanor, but people should realize that when they're coming back from buying their marijuana in Massachusetts and you get caught with it, you're going to have a misdemeanor. Unless you've got like 6 ounces, then you're going to be arrested as a dealer.
You know what the cutoff is?
They're going to have pot stops at the border? Is that what?
No, I think it's just going to be hit and miss,
but that would be a great source of revenue to put a fine on, and start catching people at the border.
But that's one of the ripple effects of being on the borders like this.
Well, when I was growing up in Connecticut, and the drinking age in Connecticut was 21, and New York was 18.
So you'd leave town.
Everybody used to go to. Right, I was in New Haven. Kids used to.
Everyone used to know what to do. Know what? It's amazing. It's like evolving. Like. Ticks evolving. People figure it out.
All right. Well, we looked at story number one here, which is pretty interesting, but the alcohol availability with the school superintendent. What do you do if you're a school superintendent? I mean, really, what can you do? It used to be school superintendents and principals could get actively involved. I know myself because I was caught with alcohol once, with the families and with discipline. But it's a trickier situation nowadays.
Yes, right. And now, the next story on our list is a story about vaping. So we have not only pot and alcohol, but now we have this tobacco hybrid. Or this nicotine hybrid that kids are smoking.
The difficulty with it is that the little devices
that
they use are easily concealed, and there's no, telltale.
Exactly, it's not like smoking in the boys' room.
Yeah, right.
But what I find, this is one of those. I got to ask everyone, what did you think was going to happen? It's like, okay, let's flavor nicotine, put it in a device that you can conceal. Hello? Anybody?
And
sell stock.
Are saying that, they didn't really mean to go after the children.
Of course they didn't. I don't know if
when you flavor it,
you do.
Apparently the most popular flavor is mango.
Right.
Can't smell it on a kid's breath. How do you smell that?
Well, when I was a kid, we didn't.
It's not like smelling cigarettes.
It wasn't vaping. Does anybody remember the candy cigarettes that they used to sell to kids that had the powdered sugar on it? So if you wanted to puff smoke, you just blew on the end of it, and it puffed a little bit
But you like sugar, and I didn't. I like the chocolate cigarettes that were wrapped that had the little gold filters.
Oh, no, these are that, but
I know. I didn't like the ones that you're talking about at all. At all.
But they've been going after the kids market for forever.
Since the beginning, because, once you've got the adults addicted, you've got to have people coming up.
Otherwise,
it's a business.
Nobody starts smoking really, at 21.
Yeah, but the whole thing
and then
keep going. But it's I'm sorry. The whole thing is pretty disingenuous, and of course it's not the problem, but the creation of the problem is like, oh, I didn't know. That's a little hard to.
Yeah,
take.
No, it is. I agree. Very hard.
And they make the devices kind of like technically, attractive to look at, and so that it has that kind of cool aspect to it that kids can get easily get attracted to.
Right. Plus, you've got a bunch of adults saying, you know, hey, that's really not good for you. So, like, what more do you need? It's the perfect storm.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
So I just, I find the whole thing, I mean.
And it isn't, by the way. It isn't good for you.
No, it really isn't. But this is the thing. You know.
No,
you,
it's not.
There needs to be a slightly, in my view, more original way of dealing with it than, you know, but they don't have any good ideas.
You know, according to our reporter, kids are sneaking puffs in class. You know, they just pull it out and take a puff and...
Well, it's no bigger than a flash drive, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, it's disguised to look like a flash drive, some of them, you know.
And it's amazing. And there's what ways now you have to come up with a new rule to deal with it. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, otherwise some parent they will or some student will sue.
Yeah.
Really? No, really.
Yeah,
it's a society we live in.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. lots of problems. Yeah. Right. I keep looking for the story.
But this is a story, by the way. You know that even though it was. Berkshire's, Southern Berkshire's superintendents, you know, this is a problem everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Right
now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's go to the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
Yeah. Well, this was an interesting story about a woman, Julie Bishop, who's looking to establish a residential transitional place for women and their children, too, who are enduring, domestic violence. And what surprises me about this story is that this hasn't been done before, you know? In any case, she's announced that she's looking for a farm to, in order to set this establishment up. And she already works at the Stanton Home, which is a home for disabled people. It's a farm, it's quite wonderful for people that are need kind of assisted living. And so she works there, and it's kind of like it's an idea. She's just transferring that kind of concept to one for battered women. So. This is interesting. We'll see how successful we'll cover it, of course, when she sets it up. Although, I have to say, I'm a little reluctant. I wonder about doing too much reporting on this because I'm wondering if she would be, a target.
Men
who are angry.
That's exactly right. It's you don't know in today's society. With social media, all of a sudden people can become very flip, and it gets very sketchy with what people's reactions are to things. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, I think that she's looking to have a farm where women can live safely and work on the farm and cultivate vegetables and flowers, etc. But she's going to have an armed guard.
Well,
Angry husbands or angry, mates, if they find out where the place is, they're going to come and try to take home their women.
It's a tough thing.
Most of these places have been, anonymously located.
Well, Women's Support Services even has on their website, if a woman's there looking for help, that if a husband or if a man's there looking for help, if a spouse comes in, an angry spouse, where they can immediately click one thing and it disappears from the screen. It goes away. So I think your comment there about being worried about covering it and too much is in today's society, unfortunately, is a true thing. And that's horrible to say when you talk about a free press.
I just about choked trying to say that. But on the other hand, we lived in it. We live in an armed camp,
Yeah.
No, it's... And,
But we live
people
in an armed...
People can come, and they're not going to just, yell and scream. They're going to start shooting, and or they could.
We live in an armed society, period. Yeah. It's an armed society. All right. that's an interesting story. We'll follow it. How about some comic relief from a local writer?
Yeah.
We could use this.
Our friend and neighbor, Danny Klein, who with his, he went to Harvard and studied philosophy, and his Harvard roommate, Tom Cathcart, and he have hooked up after many years, and Danny is a writer, written many, many books. But
he's very funny.
He's a very funny. He used to write for all the comics on television. That was his. And he wrote a book about jokes. I mean, he has a million jokes in his memory. But in any case, they created this series of books that about understanding philosophy through various avenues. One, their first one was Plato and a platypus walk into a bar, understanding philosophy through jokes. And now their latest one, which is hilarious, is I Think, Therefore I Draw, understanding philosophy through cartoons. I've read this book. It's just delightful, and it's insightful as well, because you know they talk about rather, you know, arcane philosophical concepts that they find expressed in cartoons, which you would never, you know, you might never imagine as something that you would find in a cartoon, but they do. It's quite interesting.
All right, I want to go on to your next story about Construct, Inc., because, you know, it's funny, when I first heard about Construct, I kind of figured what it was all about, but they really do a lot more than just what their name indicates, Construct.
Oh, yeah. They're really...
And that's what they want, yeah. You know. I mean, we're eager to let people know that, because Construct is really an organization that has a tremendous amount of local support, but most people don't realize what it does. And so this is their 25th anniversary or their 50th anniversary?
Yeah.
And they are...
Well, every year they have, in the fall, they have a walk from Butternut downtown, and hundreds and hundreds of people take part in this walk and to raise money for homelessness. To prevent homelessness, and Construct is another place where there's a transitional living for people who are homeless, and this is written by somebody who's associated with Construct, and so it's an interesting story about how their purpose in this community has really helped so many people get through really tough times and difficult times.
All right. And that's, once again, in the Berkshire Edge, not only on air, but online, BerkshireEdge.com, BerkshireEdge.com. And finally, got a great story.
The Berkshire Edge, sorry.
Yeah.
The Berkshire Edge.
The
T-H-E.
Right.
Actually, with today's internet, you can misspell Berkshire Edge, and as long as you get it together, one of the options will be the because I'm a terrible person typing like that, and I just type
it'll
anything.
It'll probably pop up.
Five things will pop up, but the right thing will be in them.
Right.
All right. Finally, in the final story, the Anglophiling of the South Berkshires.
Well, I'm just joking around there, because people are there's an intersection right across from the Great Barrington Police Station, by the way, that is the state has decided is needs to be repaired, and it's an intersection between routes 23 and route 7. 23 goes east-west, and route 7, of course, goes north-south, and the it's an intersection which they have identified as in need of repair. So that instead of having traffic lights the way they are set up now, they're going to put a roundabout. And this is just challenged people's, sense of geometry or something, but they're really complaining about the fact that roundabouts are more dangerous than the traffic light setup that they have now.
I mean, and also people say this is a ridiculous waste of money. This is a this is an intersection that works perfectly well. And the state now wants to come in and turn it into a roundabout, which means, of course, you know, impinging on the surrounding property. When I think about it, it's the state that's doing it. It's not a local decision because these are state roads that come together. 23 and 7 come together at this place. But there's a perfectly serviceable intersection with a traffic light and
crosswalks and so on.
Crosswalks, and there's no need for this. So this is really the objection that, it feels like make work.
Well, you know, people forget, everybody is saying what about or objecting to rotaries or roundabouts. But I remember when I first came to Massachusetts, I don't think I'd ever seen a rotary.
That's right. Yeah.
And I remember driving in Massachusetts and seeing signs, rotary ahead. And I thought, that is so New England. But apparently we've grown past that. But we'll see. In any case, this is just one of those issues, local issues, that has gotten people's goat.
Right.
All right. Well, we've gotten
especially since, you know, we lived through 2 years of the state renovating our downtown because Route 7 is a state road and it runs right through Great Barrington. And many people are left with the feeling that it was much better before the state came mucked around with it. And, you know, and the town accepted it because they were, you know, the state was bringing in all this money to repair our main street. But the repairing of the main street changed the sidewalk configuration, it changed the crosswalk, it changed the traffic lights, it changed the trees. And
well, there are this alley down the main street of these pear trees that would in spring bloom this magnificent white, these huge white balls, blossoms, and it was quite lovely in the spring, and that's, of course, all gone.
Right.
So people really objected to the desecration of Main Street, but, you know, it's done.
It's done.
So they don't have much fondness for the Mass Department of Transportation.
No.
All right. Well, speaking about it's done, we're done because we're out of time.
Okay.
The BerkshireEdge.com, the BerkshireEdge.
That's right.
The. we'll speak to you guys next week.
Okay. You bet.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is this week in the Berkshire Edge and the BerkshireEdge.com, the Berkshire Edge on air.